everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we are live from beautiful St. Petersburg. Really, truly, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. Certainly one of the most beautiful cities in all of Europe. Here's what's interesting. There has been a change in the works, in the air, I should say, in Russia. And you can experience it. You can really feel it with what's going on behind me. That's the St. Petersburg Economic Forum that is taking place. And there are people here from all over the world. And the reason this is so important is that just a few years ago, in Russia, and I've spoken with some of the folks who are inside that building, ministers, leaders from Russia, economic ministers, foreign ministers, men and women of the industrial part of this country, and they'll tell you that a few years ago, when the sanctions really first hit, it was difficult to get people to come here. It was difficult to do business. There was a lot of things that were really, there was a real chokehold, if you will, on the Russian economy. Well, Russia appears to be back. I want to share some numbers with you now that show it is so crowded just behind me inside that building when you walk the halls. It's hard to be able to maneuver just to be able to make it through the hallways. Participants, 22,000 people have been filling these buildings behind me. 140 different countries from all over the world are represented. 1,070 deals have already been signed, and those deals, here's the motherlode, right? Those deals amount to something akin to $82 billion into the economy. So suffice it to say that at least in terms of engagement from other countries, businesses, and other monies that are being poured in and shared and transactions that are taking place, it appears that Russia, through BRICS, is back. And we're going to be talking about that. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is The Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Obviously, we also have to talk about some of the things that are taking place right now in the world. And those things have to do with Iran and Israel. You heard yesterday on this show, and it's been making headlines, when I sat down and spoke with the director of information for the Foreign Ministry of Russia, who told us that Israel has no right to force regime change on Iran. Interesting, the word that she's using, regime change, very different from trying to stop their nuclear program, because there's a question about what the true motivation is. Since then, Mr. Erdogan, president of Turkey, has stepped it up a bit. He just came out with a statement that says, Netanyahu has surpassed Hitler. Think about that for a moment, that Netanyahu has surpassed Hitler. You know, Mr. Erdogan often says things like this. The question is what happens after language like this, especially in that part of the world. One more thing I need to share with you. There's a source inside Iran who has told RT that if somebody else joins Israel, then Israeli nuclear sites will face crushing blows. Direct quote. Israeli nuclear sites will face crushing blows. Is Iran sending a message to Donald Trump, to the West, to Starmer, to all these individuals who have been making quasi-threatening remarks? Remains to be seen. Here's something else. I want you to hear now a piece of sound that comes from, of all people, Ted Cruz. Remember yesterday I played Ted Cruz when he was saying that he wanted to bomb Iran, even though he has no clue who the people are who live in Iran, how many people live in Iran, or the demographic breakdown of Iran, which I thought was fascinating, right? Well, there's another soundbite I'm going to play for you now, where you're going to hear him talk about his motivation for wanting to bomb and destroy and create regime change in Iran. And his explanation is, it has to do with God. Here it is.
Growing up in Sunday school, I was taught from the Bible, those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who curse Israel will be cursed. And from my perspective, I want to be on the blessing side of things.
Of the those who bless the government of Israel?
Those who bless Israel is what it says. It doesn't say the government of, it says the nation of Israel. So that's in the Bible. As a Christian, I believe that.
Where is that?
I can find it to you. I don't have the scripture off the tip of my. You pull out the phone and use the
Google. It's in Genesis. But so you're quoting a Bible phrase, you don't have context for it, and you don't know where in the Bible it is, but that's like your theology? I'm confused. What does that even mean?
It's a fascinating conversation. By the way, this thing is going, you thought the one yesterday went viral, this thing's going viral as well. Because one thinks, what is the point being made here? Because a country is a government, and the people who are doing this, representing Israel, are the government. Bibi Netanyahu is someone who only has 50% of support from the people of Israel. So what he's saying is what? If Hitler came back and was the president of Israel, then he would have to support him as well, biblically? How about Satan? Same thing? I mean, it's really, I mean, I don't mean to sound, you know, reductio de absurdum here through argument, but, you know, it's almost a silly thing to hear a senator, you know, like the second highest office other than the president of the United States, saying that he wants to destroy a country because he thinks he read it somewhere in the Bible, but he can't remember exactly where in the Bible he read it. A fascinating conversation. Here's another one, and this is another important question that we have to get to, and it's about why is Donald Trump doing this? Donald Trump, the same president who was on the record criticizing the Iraq war, Donald Trump, the same president who said he was going to be anti-war and would never engage in something like this, is suddenly doing something that looks very similar to the attack on Iraq. In fact, think it through. What was the attack on Iraq? The United States said that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, so they attacked them, and then after they attacked them and after they destroyed the country, they said, oops, sorry, they didn't have them. What's happening now? I mean, there is no credible evidence that Iran has weapons of mass destruction, even has a nuclear program, other than Bibi Netanyahu saying so. So once again, same scenario. We have the United States saying that a country has to be destroyed, has to be bombed, and we have to go to war with them because they have something we haven't proven they have. Well, here's someone I respect who I speak with quite a bit, Colonel Doug McGregor, explaining why Donald Trump is doing this.
I mean, let's be frank. President Trump would not be in the White House today if it were not for wealthy Jewish billionaires allied with their friend Netanyahu, who put Trump into office. And Trump had to promise certain things if he were elected, one of which was that he's going to take on and destroy Iran. I'm sure that that was made very clear to him. Because they're interested not simply in Israel's local hegemony in the Middle East, they want global financial hegemony. The United States is simply a tool in their toolbox to get them there. So Tulsi has none of that. Tulsi is irrelevant. Tulsi is there because Tulsi supported Trump to get elected, but Tulsi is also an articulate and intelligent woman. It's nice to have one of those in the cabinet, by the way. And she is a person of character that all of us respect. I'm not surprised at all at anything that Tulsi has said because Tulsi tells the truth, and I pay great tribute to her. I don't know how much longer she's going to be able to stay in the cabinet under these circumstances.
Do you hear that? Tulsi Gabbard tells the truth. But here's the problem. In the United States right now, you have the truth represented in the form of Tulsi Gabbard, who, by the way, is a veteran. And then you have money. Which one wins? I leave you with that question, or maybe better off, I'm going to ask it of my guest. We are joined right now by Abdel Gamal Nasser. He is the former Secretary General of the African Chamber of Commerce. And of course, if you recognize the name, it's because he is the grandson, I should say, of one of the, if you'll pardon me saying this, one of the most respected, one of the greatest leaders in the Middle East, a man who to this day is remembered as a true leader in a time when we're not seeing a lot of men like your grandfather these days. So thank you, Abdel, so much for coming and joining us.
Thank you, Rick.
Really appreciate you being here.
It's an honor to be here.
We just played something where we heard Colonel McGregor say that Donald Trump is beholden to Jewish, Israeli, Zionist money. Fill in the blank. Is he right?
I believe so. You know, when I think about this particular situation, Donald Trump is first and foremost, he's a businessman. Mm. He has a business empire. He has everything to lose. And it's hard for me to imagine that a businessman who became president would want to leave the presidency on a bad note with the Israeli lobby. And on the contrary, I think he would want to leave office being a hero to Israel and to the Israeli lobby and the Jewish lobby in the United States.
I remember when I used to work at CNN before they fired me for saying too many things that sounded like something I'm about to repeat to you. I was going home and I turned on my radio and I heard Donald Trump. At the time, he was just some guy on TV who I thought was whoever. And he was saying, the Iraq war is horrible. This is stupid. It was a mistake. We never should have gone in. It was all based on lies. And I thought, that man is right. And what am I hearing now? Almost the same exact thing. It's got to bother the average thinking human being. It's got to bother you.
Yes, absolutely. It's of course, when before the presidency, the dialogue or the narrative is something, and then after the presidency, and I think when once they realize what's at stake for them as presidents, then they start to follow the narrative that that is being dictated upon them from interest groups.
Abdel Nasser is the grandson of Abdel Nasser, who was the leader of Egypt, knows the region perhaps as well as anybody. It must hurt you to see these pictures that we have been sharing, these bombings of both Tehran and Tel Aviv.
Look, absolutely. It's very alarming because, you know, Israel is always complaining that the surrounding countries, whether it's Iran, Iraq, or maybe even at some point it will be Egypt, that we pose an existential threat to Israel. But when in fact Israel is the one posing to us an existential threat, because how many countries have we seen that the regime was changed, they fell into civil war, they fell into chaos?
Well, let me help you. Syria, Libya, Yemen, Iraq, Afghanistan, and now Iran, if it goes. And there was one other on the list, right?
Egypt was on the, yes.
This, your country.
Yes, I believe you're referring to the project for the new American century.
Mm-hmm. Bill Kristol?
Yes.
John Bolton?
Yes, and Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney?
I believe this was a plan. Let me also tell you about that. We have a writer called Mohammed Hassanin Hekel. He's a very prominent Egyptian writer, and he has sources in his books from the American Foreign Office to the diplomats in Britain, emphasizing that they have an interest in Middle East oil, and basically arguing that they should inherit some of the colonial past of Britain, for example, by...
Who should?
America. The United States.
Yeah. So Americans are going to take over where the French and the British and the Dutch and others left off.
Yes, in a neo-colonial way, you know, we have many resources, and I believe this is the main reason of the existence of the United States in the region across the Atlantic. And it is also one of the reasons Israel wants to expand in the region.
But Ted Cruz says it's biblical.
Are they jihadists now? You know,
it's like they are, it's biblical. I've got to bomb Iran, and I probably had to bomb Iraq because the Bible tells me I have to do this, right?
But then this is...
What do you make of that?
This represents a double standards, because, you know, are you a secular state or are you a religious state? Are you some kind of a Western jihadist?
Or are you just stupid?
Or, yes, you know, yeah. you need to think through, because Israel has the same thing where they are... they say they're a Jewish state, but they are governed by secular laws.
Yeah.
So which is it? And can you imagine a country in the region saying something like this?
Yeah, if you're not Muslim, you can't come here. And if you come here, we'll make you live in some little neighborhood and we'll occupy you.
Yes.
Imagine doing that. Well, gee, I wonder who's doing that. I get one guess, Israel.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about Erdogan. He came out today and said that Netanyahu's worse than Hitler. Then again, you know, as a reporter, I'm always covering things that Erdogan says. Erdogan always says big things. Mm. I'm not sure he does big things.
You know,
am I being too critical?
No, Erdogan is a very complex leader, in my opinion. I think he's one of the smartest leaders today.
Really?
Yes, and if you recall the reason Bashar left, Erdogan played a very big role. In fact, I think for 2 years there was this narrative that he was against Israel, and then there was a sort of coordination with Israel to attack Syria from the south. So Erdogan is playing, you know, some form of political game. And
but somebody like you, you're a really smart person who comes historically from a wonderful background and family. You're a very intelligent man, and you're a businessman. Can you explain to me why it is that this union of Arab countries has never been able to assert itself as well as perhaps it should have against the forces of Israel?
Well, if you look at the Arab identity, today it is shaped by, you know, the Sykes-Picot agreement following the First World War, where the Arab countries were divided among the British and the French.
And Churchill, with a bottle of gin, sat there and drew a bunch of lines and made all these countries?
Yes. So, so originally the Arabs are one people, you know, they are one identity. We have one common identity, we have one language, we have one history, we share the same geography. So when we become divided and then every country has its own sovereignty, then it becomes difficult. And we are also, you know, we are divided and there is a play on the balance of power in the region where Israel is very strong. And so we get this fragmentation. And it's difficult to reach conclusions when you are divided and threatened at the same time.
And is it the two different sects of the Muslim religion as well that keep countries like, you see this divide between, which is less now, but the Gulf states, the Saudis, for example, and the Iranians?
Yes, again, this is a big debate about Shia and Sunni Islam, but it is not, it shouldn't be as big, in my opinion, shouldn't be as big as it appears to be, because in the end, it is one religion, it is one people.
Here's the $60,000 question. What happens if the United States and Great Britain and other European countries join Israel in bombing the hell and trying to destroy Iran? What happens? And the second part of my question about, of course, is what do you think happens regionally? Who goes in? Who stays out? How big a conflagration would we be looking at?
Okay, if I take you back to 1967, where Israel attacked Egypt also in a preemptive strike similar to the one we saw a week ago with Iran, only ours was very devastating. President Charles de Gaulle of France at the time said, the battle is American, but the performance is Israeli. So, yes, and we believe that...
Are you saying that's the case now?
Yes, they are acting in unison, for sure, because at the end of the day, it is the United States has an interest in the region, energy, gas and oil. And coming to the second part of the question, were the Western powers to bomb Iran, and they will just create first of all, an economic, a devastating economic situation, refugees, displaced peoples, power vacuums, civil wars, and, you know, behind the curtains, we know that there are Islamist militias that are being financed from Western countries.
You mean like the president of Syria? I'm kidding. But you know what I'm many, thinking. There One are day many, you're a terrorist, the next day you're a president. How's that happen?
Yes, there are many examples. We've seen it many times. Al-Baghdadi even may have been one.
You know, but if you really think about this, as I'm thinking through it now, we got our butts kicked in Iraq. We got our butts kicked in Afghanistan. We actually got our butts kicked in Vietnam, if you want to go back. The United States has not won a war in quite a long time. Mm. We just go in and we just fight and fight and fight. And we don't know if we win or we lose. The country ends up ruined. Somebody makes a lot of money on downed planes. Yes. Is that what will happen if we go into war with Iran and the American people will not even care because it won't even be a story in the news?
Yes, I don't think the American public, and by the way, I don't believe what's happening in the government, what sometimes happens in the government is reflective of the American people, because the American people are very nice people. I have American friends, they are lovely people, but the government...
And you don't hate me.
I know, I'm very honored, I feel very privileged to be here. And you're a wonderful person. And
you're very kind to say that, and as are you.
And I have many American friends, but... it is the governments. The governments are not reflective. They are representing an interest group.
Yeah.
And this interest group has an interest in the region.
And it's not even really, you know, here's the bad part. It's not even the government. It's a puppeteer above the government. Mm-hmm. It seems like my country, the United States of America, Ted Cruz doesn't run America. Mm. Donald Trump doesn't even run America. Obama didn't run America. Biden didn't run America. Clinton didn't run America. People ran Clinton to run America the way they wanted it run. Mm-hmm. That's what we're all seeing now. That's what we're seeing history show us. The forces that you mentioned a little while ago, the names like Bolton and Bill Kristol and Cheney and these guys who drew up these plans, when they drew up the plan, they weren't government leaders. Mm-hmm. They were somebody else. Yes. That's the problem, I think, that we have right now. It's big money, right?
Yes, it's an interest group with, I think the bottom line is resources and energy.
Energy?
Yes, it used to be gold, mm-hmm. You know, at one point. Now it's oil and gas. And
I'm going to change the subject on you. Is that why the United States wants to go to war or is on a war footing with Russia? Because it doesn't make any sense otherwise. I mean, why is the United States fighting in Ukraine, a country that most people in America couldn't even find on a map? Is it all about energy because Russia is so resource rich?
Well, in the case of Ukraine, what was the proposal for America to intervene and stop the war? It was the minerals.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a resource grab.
Can Israel win in Iran without the United States, you think, Abdel?
I don't believe so. No. I think if history has shown us anything, that Israel always relies on the preemptive strikes. And relies on the American support. How would they do without the American support? Nobody really knows now. Of course, they are advanced militarily, but I don't know to what extent, how far they can go without the American support.
They say that Iran was on the brink of having nuclear weapons. Do you think that's bullcrap?
I don't believe this.
Yeah.
We never believed it during Iraq also. And were there ever weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? No. So, and by the way, Netanyahu, I think he's been saying this since the early
30 years.
Yes.
Let me ask you about this thing I read a little while ago, and I'm sharing this with my audience. Apparently, RT has a source in Iran that says to them in the government, if somebody else joins Israel, then Israel's nuclear sites will face a crushing blow. What do you make of that?
It's war. It's a psychological war. It's a war of nerves. You cannot appear weak. Mm-hmm. Iran is a big country. They need to say all kinds of things. But Of course, if the United States enters the war, it will be a very unequal display of power. You know, the United States has much more ammunition, bigger weapons. So I think they have to say this. I don't know the capability of Iran, of course, what they can do with the Americans, but I would imagine they have to, because they are threatening to kill the leadership in the United States, and they are threatening to bomb the nuclear sites. So I believe they have to also...
talk big?
Yes, they have to. It's a psychological war in the end.
But if Iran has a bigger population and a bigger and more sophisticated army than Iraq and certainly Afghanistan, the United States couldn't win in Afghanistan and couldn't win in Iraq. What makes you think they can win in Iran?
They don't have to win. They can just set the country back, create problems for it, gradually, like they had done before, you know, in many countries.
Where do you think this goes if the United States gets in directly? And how worried are you about it for your region?
I am very worried because, first of all, then it would leave Egypt as, you know, the final big boss in the region for
yeah. You mean you're next?
Possibly.
Yeah.
You know, but it also, it means economies, you know, facing devastating shocks, inflation. The ripples of war are felt, you know, by many of the countries surrounding. And we live in a very interdependent world.
Yeah.
The economies are very interdependent. Even now, movement, you know, it's difficult. A flight which takes 3 hours will take 6 hours. It's just devastating. So with a big war such as, like a striking Iran, it would create, you know, a huge ripples of effect in the region.
Jeffrey Sachs talks about this thing that you and I talked about, where there's a domino effect of countries that Israel, which is so bizarre that we're talking about a country about this big that is doing this, but is creating these dominoes that they needed to have fall one after the other. The latest is Syria, where Israel is happy now with the situation in Syria, for example. Do you think the ultimate plan for Israel is to weaken or devastate most of those countries and most of the region so it can have dominance?
Yes. You remember when there was a time when Israel made a fuss about someone saying from the river to the sea?
Yeah.
Well, this is actually an Israeli thing. It's not an Arab thing. They're the ones who say they want to rule from the river to the sea. Or we say from the Nile to the Euphrates, we believe that this is what they want. And I think there were pictures of their military uniform showing the new map of Israel as they imagine it. Yeah. So it's an expansionist ideology that they take. And we believe that they are a threat to the region, not the Arabs being a threat to them. They are the ones who got parachuted into the region.
Is Gaza a genocide?
Of course. Of course. It's.
Is there any other word for it?
There is no other word for it, and it's blatant genocide. And what hurts more is that the international community seems paralyzed from doing anything about it. You know, it's. Again, the double standards. You are saying a country like Iran has nuclear weapons, and you're thinking of bombing. You have not proven, and at the same time, Israel is known to have atomic nuclear weapons. And
though it's not official,
everyone knows. And I think also they said it one
right
before on live on television. So it's and they are. They want the land. Well, if you want, why can't you live with the Palestinians if you want the land so much? No, they want to ethnic cleanse the region.
Israel hasn't always been like this. It seems Israel is I mean, even during the time of your grandfather, it seems like Israel is worse now, more strident, more militant. And the reports, there's a wonderful documentary out there right now. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called The Bibi Files. It's on YouTube. It's the story of Bibi Netanyahu, what has caused him to become this way. The theory is he just wants to avoid jail because there's enough information on him that would send him to jail because, according to this documentary, he's horribly corrupt. And they've got the goods on him. So he had to turn somewhere, so he turned to the militant factions in his government and said, I'll just become a militant leader and just start wars. As long as I'm in war, nobody will take me out of office. That's the theory. What do you think?
Yes, I've heard this theory before. It, of course, it makes very good sense in that if he's at war, then he can silence many people by saying your voice cannot be overheard over the war, you know.
So he want so there's actually even a theory out there, and I want to be careful because I don't want to be conspiratorial because that's not journalism, but there are people who are credible who have said that there are forces inside Israel who looked the other way deliberately on October 7th so that they could have a reason to do what they are doing in Gaza. What do you make of that?
Well, October 7 is a suspicious thing for me because it is hard to convince me that a retaliation for October 7 would be to cause a regime change in one country, attack Hamas and Hezbollah, and now engaging in a preemptive strike against Iran. It seems like it was pre-planned. And when you take into consideration the pagers and the effort and the planning that went into the pagers, then it makes this whole event or this whole story suspicious.
Yeah, how can Israel, which we have learned or believe has one of the most sophisticated security forces in the world, the IDF is incredibly tight,
exactly,
knows every single person who goes through every entry point, and all of a sudden one day they all fall asleep and they just pour over the border and kill whoever they want.
Exactly.
Does seem odd.
It is very suspicious. And coming back to your comment on Israel, it hasn't been always like this. Actually, no, we believe it has always been like this, but it did not have the means. The balance of power was a little bit balanced,
yeah,
so to speak.
Well, if you hear Olmert talk, for example, the former prime minister, he sounds like a decent man who really wants to create a two-state solution, no?
Well, I cannot comment on that, but what I can say is that they, when they arrived to Palestine, they were very violent. They were very aggressive. They were killing Palestinians. They were expelling Palestinians out of their homes. And I just believe they didn't have the means to do what they're doing now. But now that they do have this difference, huge difference in power against the Arab states through the via the American backing, now they can do this.
Do you really believe they have deliberately killed journalists, deliberately killed doctors, deliberately killed children, deliberately attacked people who they moved from one place to another and said, you can't be there, we're going to put you in a refugee camp over here, and then bomb those people in the refugee? I mean, those are just five of, could be maybe 10 more accusations I could think of offhand. But all those things seemingly are being discussed by witnesses and are being told to the United Nations. The United Nations has said that those things are in fact happening. Do you believe they're happening, and what do you make of it?
Some of these things they've, it's evident. Yesterday Gaza was struck, and I believe 60 people, around 60
yeah,
people were
killed. That's correct. Killed. And growing.
Why? You know, you're fighting Iran, and you've supposedly taken out Hezbollah, and you have weakened Hamas. What are you hitting? What are you striking? You know, it's so.
civilians.
Yes. So some of these points that you mentioned are self. It's visible to see the truth, and some they have even stated themselves.
Let me ask you a final question about the situation in Ukraine. It looks like the Russians want to sit down once again post these terrorist attacks that have happened with the trains in Russia, and sit down once again with the Ukrainian negotiators. I had a conversation with Mr. Medinsky, the lead negotiator for Russia, not long ago, and he told me that he fears he's negotiating with negotiators who don't have the power to negotiate because Mr. Zelensky doesn't want them to come up with a solution. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that?
I cannot really comment on that. I have not been following. I have been recently following the what's happening in our region more. So, but again, you see a lot of American interference in this particular war between Russia and Ukraine, because I think Russia was clear about its boundaries of NATO expansion. And this is the main reason why it has come to this, because they did not respect the boundaries, and they were empowered by other countries to, emboldened by other countries to take steps to provoke Russia and trying to. So I haven't been following.
You believe Russia was provoked into this war by the West?
Of course, of course. And
a lot of people do.
I think so. I believe so, yes.
Abdel, you're a very smart man, and you're very kind to... I know you and I spent some time this morning in a panel together, and now we get to spend part of the evening together.
It was an honor for me.
It's an honor for me, sir, to be able to talk to you. And thank you so much for your wisdom and for sharing your thoughts with us. We very much appreciate it. Well, and that's it for the Sanchez Effect, and I want to thank you so much for being with us. You know... in many ways, what we try to do here is we try to be raw, we try to be real, we try to be honest, and we try to do this without any corporate spins. In real conversations, when someone sits down, like I just did with Abdel, and we have conversations without him knowing what I'm going to ask or without me knowing what he wants me to ask, that's journalism. It's what we try to do. We'll see you again next time.